I'm Morgan Spruill. Last night was the State of the Union address, and we'll be talking with Media and Communications Professor Kelly Caulfield about how the president's address measured up and what this means for the rest of his term.
And I'm Pierre Powell. Today we'll also talk about some of the changes in technology and what that means for the future. Will things get better or worse? We'll discuss coming up.
And I'm Kevin Wade. This morning we'll bring you a local look at some of the exciting things happening on campus as well as throughout the Hub City. But first, here's your KTXT news and weather.
Good morning, I'm Kiara Powell with your KTXT News update. Japanese video game maker Nintendo is reporting a huge loss. It attributes to weak sales of its latest gaming console. The company reported an operating loss of $15.3 million today for the 9 months, ending on December 31st of 2013. Net income for the company dropped 30% and sales of the Wii U console reached only 2.4 million units. Worse news is expected in a few months. The company says it expects to report a $335 million operating loss for the fiscal year that ends in March. A Kansas man is breathing a little easier after risking his life in a house fire to save his Xbox. According to the Oath Edge, the fire at the unnamed gamer's home started early Friday morning. Authorities say he re-entered the house to rescue the console, inhaling plenty of smoke along the way. Paramedics on the scene checked him out after the risky mission and said he was fine, but the fire reportedly caused $80,000 worth of damage to his home. A fire department spokesman reminded everyone afterwards that no item is as precious or valuable as a life. A new survey from VoucherCodes.com is speaking to the growing popularity of the man bag. The online poll has found that 55% of men carry around a bag of some kind on a regular basis and are not afraid of appearing too feminine because of it. 1 in 9 of the bag-carrying men say they view it as a fashion accessory, and 1 in 14 say they decided to buy one after a significant other complained about having to carry their belongings. When asked what items men usually have in their bags, it included things like a wallet, that was the most popular, and smartphones, headphones, glasses, and laptops. Here's Cutter Martin with a look at our weather.
Another day and another frigid morning out there. Temps right around 10 degrees, maybe 10 to 12 headed out the door this morning. But after 8 o'clock, southwesterly breeze, plenty of sun, really helping to boost those temperatures up. Should be in the 30s by noon this afternoon. Much better than yesterday. Highs in the upper 40s to near 50. Mostly sunny skies, but again, winds will be gusty, making it feel a bit cooler out there. Cold again tonight, but not nearly as cold as the past few nights. Tomorrow morning, mid and upper 20s. For the Raider, I'm Cutter Martin.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. It is 8:03, Wednesday morning, January 29th.
Matt and DG are being cruel right now. They just brought in a whole box of donuts and are like waving them at us through the window.
Kevin, we had a meeting at 6 a.m. this morning and those donuts were there. Nothing new, buddy.
No one told me about any of this. Oh, well. I want a donut. Someone should bring me a donut. What?
In regards to the story that I just read, do you carry around a man bag?
I do not. I was kind of interested in that. I was like,
no,
who are they polling? No.
Why? I mean, I don't think that you should be, I don't know, like judged or something for doing that.
Well, no. I mean, like, I wouldn't be like, I think I'd be comfortable carrying around something like that. I just, for me, a backpack is a whole lot easier than doing that. I'd carry around a backpack all day before I'd carry like a little
like
pull
a
string
bag or something.
Yeah. Well,
you
I do.
Carry you'd carry a backpack over a cross bag.
Yeah, I don't know what a cross bag is, but
Another name for a man bag.
Oh, see, there you go. But I know my brother actually does, but no, it's more of like a pull string bag. He carries it around everywhere he goes. So I understand this, but I just don't really understand the appeal of something that just like hangs off one shoulder. It's a practicality thing for me.
Anywho, DG carries a lot of them.
He's got like 3 at one time. He's just carrying all the merces.
He's like that guy on The Hangover. What's his name? He's got a weird, crazy last name.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He carries a handbag.
You're talking about Zach Galifianakis?
Yeah. Zach Galifianakis.
Whoever his character was, his name is, he's not exactly the best spokesperson for that, though, or his character. But hey, if Zach Galifianakis does, there you go. Anyway, current events. What
current
do we got?
Events. Well, CNN has stated that the University of North Carolina claims that it's failed some of its students 4 years by allowing them to take classes that did not match its own academic standards. And this has kind of been recent news, I guess, but 2 years ago it was exposed that UNC students, many of them athletes, were given grades for classes they did not attend and for which they did nothing beyond turning in a single paper. One professor has been indicted on fraud charges for being paid for a class he didn't teach. So, I don't know. I just thought it was relevant.
That's crazy. It's, you know, it's college, yeah.
Yeah, well, last Monday we were talking about tenure professors and the pros and cons of taking a class with one of them and, you know, so on and so forth. So I just thought this was an interesting story.
This is like pros and cons of taking a class with a teacher that doesn't exist.
Yes. And UNC is now investigating research into how they can, I mean, I guess implementing some research to how they can better accommodate their students
that,
and change, you know, I guess the integrity of their academics at this point. So.
That I think that might be a good thing. But, hey, probably the athletes are just like, hey, cool, I showed up, turned in a paper, got
well,
it.
That's what I hate. Like, Kira, what do you think about it? I mean, I don't think that if you're getting a full-ride scholarship on top of a meal plan, on top of $1,200
a semester to actual classes.
You know, yeah, you should have to attend class. You better you better be there every single time, in my opinion.
Well, you know,
like, I like the idea of not going to class.
Doesn't always frequent the classroom for various reasons. I would say that, you know what, if your grades measure up and you're doing okay and you're keeping your end of the bargain, I don't really care if you're in class or not. But if your grades reflect the fact that you are stinking it up pretty great, then yeah. I think that changes the game a little bit.
DG just gave you a death stare. It was like a fatherly scolding.
I am so sorry. You know what? I have only ever not done well in one class.
Excuses. Okay.
And that was because the teacher doesn't work here anymore.
There you go.
She was terrible.
Boom.
So,
for as much as you pay like other ordinary students.
DG is playing me a violin, and I don't care. That's fine. She was a terrible teacher. That's the only class that I ever did not maybe pass, okay? But I went to the class. That wasn't the problem. She was a bad teacher. So I went, didn't pass, and when I don't go, I do much better. So, I mean, what's the problem?
Well, I mean, this article is specifically targeting student athletes.
Okay.
So
fair enough. But they have a lot.
So you don't count.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, I mean, not that you don't.
Thank you. That's so rude. I just caught that.
No, I mean, not that you don't count. I was just saying, you know, like from an ordinary student's perspective,
yeah.
You know, when we're paying, you know, close to $80,000 a year for, you know, education, and then you're getting it for free and getting all these other perks.
True.
And I understand that you do have an obligation and you are making the school money per se, but, you know, only if you're football. What about the rest of the, you know, athletic
that's
students?
True.
So that's just what I'm saying.
Mean, I understand where you're coming from. I totally do.
But
definitely an interesting situation.
In other news, I thought this was really interesting because we are the College of Media and Communication. There has been an algorithm that was made that can write better news stories than human reporters, allegedly. So, yeah, pretty crazy
stuff.
This
is like Terminator, Rise of the Machines. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. And this article is saying that potentially it could be job, you know, threatening to journalism students, media students, integrated marketing communication students, so on and so forth. But in my opinion, I don't think it's going to be
that's never
too
going
big deal.
To.
I mean, of course you can write something that says, all right, here's this formula, who, what, when, where, why for this story. Like, it's not very hard.
I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Oh, it is. I mean.
Well, and investigative pieces, of course. I'm just saying, like, this girl, the story that Kevin's about to talk about next, you know, a 16-year-old Texas girl who fell from skydiving. You know, like, all you need for this or something would be who, what, when, where, why, and there's your story. Yeah. But for other pieces, yeah, of course I understand.
You need the more. I don't think a machine is ever going to be able to recreate, you know, some of the wit or some of the other things that happen when a really, really good reporter, a really solid reporter, really knows how to captivate an audience beyond just the rules of the newsroom.
Absolutely.
So that's really what's important there. So I don't think that any sort of the artificial technology is going to take that over anytime soon. Just like the talks about like artificial intelligence in general, artificial pilots, drones, they'd say, you know, they can't make the same decisions pilots do. I think there is the distinctive human factor that is going to keep humans in the newsroom and in the workplace throughout the world on that.
We'll see. Well, this
your conspiracy theorist, Kira.
Well, no, I just feel like it eventually will. News, we'll see how long news programs.
Well, this author proposes by 2024 that a computer could win the Pulitzer Prize instead of other people. But I disagree.
I don't even think that should be
humans
allowed.
Make computers. Humans, you know, build those like algorithms and so on and so forth, and you just enter it into the computer type things. Like,
yeah.
So I don't necessarily understand that will ever happen.
That is interesting.
What do you got, Kevin?
As Morgan just said, I have a story. A Texas teen in good condition after plummeting over 3,000 feet in skydiving accidents. She plummeted 3,000 feet, like half a mile, because her parachute didn't open correctly. And it says here that she broke, like, a few ribs and where did it go? Yeah, she is still in recovery. She broke her pelvis, a few ribs, has like a few scratches and stuff. Did not what you'd expect. Someone
it wasn't detrimental.
Dropping 3,000 feet. Dr. Jeffrey Bender, trauma surgeon at OU Medical Center. This did happen in Oklahoma. Says he doesn't know the particulars of the accident, but if she truly fell 3,000 feet, he has no idea how she survived. Her parents are actually quite upset. Her dad said they should not have allowed the jump to happen. A 16-year-old girl should not have been allowed to make those jumps.
Where were her parents?
Okay, here's the thing. Is like this is all in hindsight, and he's just
I'm so angry now.
Yeah, he's angry now.
Well, Texas, you can't do it unless you're 18 years old, and that was my first thing was, well, I thought the law was you couldn't skydive unless you were 18 years old, and even then, I think you had to go through a certain number of hours of training, so on and so forth. And
yeah. Not when you jump with someone.
Really?
But I don't think she was jumping with someone. Like, this was a solo jump at 16, is what it sounds like.
Well, I mean, it sounds like there were a lot of people at fault, but as a parent, if you were on board with the idea, the decision from the get-go, then you cannot turn around and be angry about it. They should have let her do it. You were part of that decision-making.
And this is what it said. Nancy Kareen, who is the director of sports promotion at the Fredericksburg VA-based U.S. Parachute Association, the place where she jumped, said... Mm-hmm. Its safety requirements allowed someone who's 16 to make a dive with parental consent.
Yep.
She says some drop zones set higher age, but the point here is parental consent. So the father being so upset, I feel like, I mean, like, yes, I know he's worried for his daughter and upset that it happened, but you signed off on it. You gave her consent to do it. So
that's... Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
It really doesn't. But she is fine. She's recovering well. I just think it's insane that she survived that.
Exactly. Her
these
parents
incredible
are very
stories.
I mean, imagine coming back and this being a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're very lucky that, you know, in my opinion, they should have never, if they sign consent, they can't try to sue or anything like that or even go there. So, anyways, Kira, what do you have for current events?
I have something completely off topic.
All right.
I'm excited to hear about your story.
A Japanese lingerie company, has created a bra called the Smart Bra. That will only unhook when the wearer is with their true love. How does the bra know? Let me explain. It monitors the user's heart rate, sends information to a smartphone app, and when the woman's beating heart signals true love, there she blows. I don't know. So it's open. But critics are saying, like, the key problem with this is not necessarily you being around your true love is what's going to get your heart rate up, okay? you're in a job interview, you are in a stressful situation.
Nervous, your heart starts beating.
Exactly. And that's the last thing. Well, my thing about it is being the feminist I am, well, just because you meet your true love right then and there, does that mean that you're going to engage in, you know, something to where your bra's just going to come right off?
Yeah, that's like, awkward. You know, you're sitting
kind of
at dinner.
Jumping to conclusions.
You really like the dude. You're sitting at dinner, you're talking to him, and all of a sudden, you know, a new topic of conversation comes up.
Yeah, how embarrassing. Hey, honey, your bra's coming off.
I feel like
wardrobe malfunctions.
We now have
Janet
like
Jackson situation.
We now have like a whole smart wardrobe, because last semester we talked about that smart trench coat and the smart bike helmet and the Google Glass. You could just have like a smart clothing line.
No,
all of these things. And it all goes to your smartphone.
Well, y'all
should tell
us what y'all think about this magical bra.
Yes. Yes,
you can tweet us at TheRaider881 and also hit us up on Facebook at TheRaider881 as well. So I'd be interested to see what other people think about this.
What else do we have this morning?
We have some entertainment news. Nothing great. You know, the Grammys got 29.6 million viewers, which is pretty great. One of the best in terms of history, but I believe they beat out 60 Minutes, which 60 Minutes is a really predominant show. And so to do that is, in my opinion, pretty great.
Well, not that, you know, maybe this speaks to how shallow I can be sometimes, but I think that the Grammys might be a little bit more entertaining than 60 Minutes sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, true. I mean, it's just a one-time thing, and you can watch 60 Minutes any day of your life.
Well, for me, like, I turn on the TV, and that, like, ticking clock comes up, and I'm like, nope, channel change. Like,
I do find it very interesting, and I do like to watch it, but if you're going to give me the Grammys or 60 Minutes as an option, I'm probably going to take the Grammys.
Yeah, you know. Well, Prince drops a $22 million lawsuit against an alleged music bootleggers. I guess there's a huge lawsuit against against 22 bootleggers who allegedly posted footage of his concerts online. So Prince really cracking the whip on pirated music, as a lot of people are doing these days. You know, Metallica performed at the Grammys. They're one of history's greatest examples of bands who hate pirates. They go after them all the time. I just don't know. The fact that he dropped it kind of shows that it's not maybe not such a big deal anymore, but people aren't freaking out so much maybe about bootlegged music. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Haven't we talked about this?
No,
like buying music or bootlegging music?
I think it was video stuff. Movies,
yeah.
And stuff like that.
But I mean, like, I know I get most of my stuff off iTunes, particularly, mostly just for the quality.
Yeah, well, I think we might have an expert coming on now. He is our director of music, and we'll ask Matt Smith what he thinks about this subject. So, Matt, can you hear us?
Not yet. Hold on. He's still putting his stuff on, but yeah, he jumps up. He's like, ooh, I want to talk. I got something on this. We'll wait for him.
In my opinion, I almost think...
Yeah, I definitely have a take on the whole music piracy thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
I think it kind of hinders the artists who are really struggling.
Yeah.
I think artists like Prince and like Justin Bieber and all them, I don't think it really affects them as much because they're making a ton of money through touring anyways.
Their concerts, all that good stuff.
Yeah, also through record sales. But it's the artists who are really struggling, like the indie artists, a lot of the ones we feature here, that really need every dollar they can get.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a statistic like 1 in 12 albums makes money these days. It's like a very small percentage of albums actually make money. So yeah, most of the money that these artists make is through touring and stuff. But
or merchandise. That's why you see all these people picking up fragrances and Selena Gomez. She has her whole brand and, you know, all that good stuff. So
exactly. Even some of the more prominent indie artists like, you know, Foster the People used to be an indie artist and now they're more mainstream. Those guys don't drive Bugattis. You know, I'm not saying that they're struggling or you know, lower class, but the fact of the matter is very few artists are rolling in the dough these days. It's not what it was in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's really funny when you go to, you know, things in Austin, some like ATX or even South by Southwest, and you'll see these really, really great artists, and they'll pull up in this like really crappy
just janky,
van,
beat
like
up
right
van.
Parked in the back, and it's just like, oh, I feel so bad for you.
That's how you know they're good, is when they pull up in that, and you're like, all right, this is going to be awesome.
Exactly. It's become like what's cool now. It's like, you know, we're still struggling. You know, we live in our van on the road, so that's kind of in right now.
And I think it's interesting, though, because with this whole Kickstarter revolution where bands can actually have, you know, self-fund their campaigns and get their music out there. So I think that while technology, I guess, in the early 2000s helped out really people who didn't want to pay for music and pirated, now with all this new technology, indie artists can get out there. So it's kind of counteracting that somewhat. And I think that's really cool how there are these artists that can come up from nowhere, raise their own funds, and produce an album and be heard. So
yeah, well, thanks, Matt, for that insight. Really, there's no good entertainment news, in my opinion, right now, just because of the
Amber
Grammys and stuff like that.
Heard but is engaged to Johnny Depp.
What?
Yeah.
Is she the model?
They were in Rum Diaries together.
Oh, okay.
27-year-old.
Well, that
50.
Is interesting.
Interesting.
Okay,
where
and she's like,
that?
What, 30?
Because I've been looking on
E!
Sites all morning. Oh, okay.
They're showing a picture of the ring. It's this ginormous diamond. Very pretty.
Massive.
Of course. He probably didn't even pay for it. Some jeweler was like, here, I'll give you this ring.
To you.
If
just
you
take
know,
it.
She wears it in publicity.
Exactly.
You know.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well, other than that, we'll come back and talk about some Google Glass and other technology like that. But right now, it's Fools by Noise FM.
Complications.
And that was Fools by Noise FM. Pretty good band. What'd y'all think?
That was awesome. I like that. That definitely woke me up.
Alrighty. Well,
a little louder than usual. I like that.
Google Glass. I don't know if many of you have heard about it yet. It just dropped the beta version. $1,500. Our college just acquired one.
Yeah, that was awesome. Morgan and I are actually in a class with Dr. Todd Chambers, and he brought someone in who showed us the Google Glass, which was actually pretty cool. I was just astounded by the ease of use of that thing. It was crazy.
Well, explain it first if you can, just in case some,
so the Google Glass, it's by Google, and what they've done, they've put in a glasses frame, they've put close to your face a little prism, and it works as a screen. And attached to that is a camera, one facing back out at the world and one facing back at you to kind of track your eye movements and see what you're doing. And the idea is that you can be walking around like any other person with these glasses on your face, have instant use of camera, video, your text messages go to it, your Facebook notifications go to it, you can check your email, everything goes to this one thing that you never even have to touch. It's just on your face. You can talk to it, you can make it function just by touching the side of it. It's insane. And so, I mean, what the first thing he showed us was how to post to Facebook. He's like, Google Glass on. And then he touches the side of the glasses. He's like, I just took a picture. Taps it twice and goes, I just posted it to Facebook.
I don't like that.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So immediately, Kira, you have some issues.
Oh, okay.
What are they?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Morgan was in that class, and she had her picture taken, and Derek was talking to her this morning about it. Mm-hmm. She didn't even realize her picture had been taken. So I'm just thinking, and she said that you guys are saying that they look like they could be normal glasses.
Not yet. They're still a little bit gaudy, and I don't know. Like, right now, it's just kind of this big honking thing, like, on the side of your head.
Yeah, you can Google it, and it'll show up. I mean, it's not too... I mean, honestly, if you had long hair, Kira, or you had bangs, you could cover that camera up, and it would hide it, in my opinion. But, yeah, the privacy issue does kind of strike me as a problem that we'll probably foresee in the future. So
I just think there are already so many ways to invade people's privacy.
Yeah.
That you're just giving this, the gateway just opens even wider.
It's crazy.
And I don't,
like, that was the biggest thing we talked about. I mean, we talked for a little bit when we were looking at about, like, how cool the technology was and that stuff. But then everyone got to, what about the privacy? What if, even if someone doesn't mean to, what if they accidentally walk into a bathroom with this thing on their face?
Yeah.
Or a dressing room.
Or a dressing room or something like that.
Accidentally, quote unquote.
You know, I can understand how you would forget to take these off. I mean.
Because they're just,
I mean, they're incredible.
My issue
insane.
Is if you do it accidentally, it's you're not going to be in there to take pictures.
Exactly. Yeah.
But my problem is for the people who, it's no accident. They know what they're doing.
But what I think is, and this is a really far out idea, and obviously I know it'll probably never happen, but you know how Obama, the last year, he was talking about implementing some chip or something that you would get in you when you went to the doctor, and it would tell, you know, all this information about you. What if this Google Glass had the ability to, I don't know, when you were walking by someone, they'd pick up that chip and automatically there's your Facebook profile page. You know their name, you know their age, you know they're a student, you know they're a teacher, you know, all this really kind of weird stuff. But what's really insane is, what if we could implement something to where if there were, you know, convicted child molesters or sex offenders, they would, you know, go bright red when you saw them walking on the street
something
or something.
To let you know immediately.
Or, you know, just for, like, safety for if this went so mainstream that children started wearing them, you know, or just, like, think of the crazy possibilities like that they could really, you know, come in handy for. But at the same time, you know, I'm like you, there are a lot of cons, I think, that could uprise from it. So
I think it's going to be a crazy balancing act between giving us as much information as possible, and it's just another device to take up our time and our attention. But it's going to be a balancing act between giving us as much information as possible and making sure that they don't give us too much or they don't take too much, because it's going to be a privacy issue. But,
yeah, definitely. And I don't know who would implement that. Would it be the FCC? Would it be our government? Would it be Google? I mean, who has
who would regulate that?
The turf to regulate that kind of stuff? So it'll be interesting to see within the coming years.
And
when do you think that'll come out mainstream, Kevin?
Well, it's going to come out here within the next year. or late 2014. Yeah, goes public end of 2014, and it's not going to cost $1,500. It's going to cost somewhere around $600, $650, which is, you know, it's an iPad basically. You're buying an iPad, or, you know, something I thought was interesting is we're talking about this technology now, and I was looking this up and when we were talking about it in class, but Oakley, the sunglass manufacturer, has had this technology in their snow goggles for a few years now, but it hasn't gone super mainstream, mostly because it's so specific. I mean, it was a little mirrored screen in the bottom of your goggles that basically tells you, like, your speed. It tells you where you are on the mountain, how many other people with this app are there on the mountain, and it hooks up to your iPod and all that kind of stuff. So, like, that's interesting. So it hasn't gotten a whole ton of press because it was so specific, but this technology is already out there. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be excited to see where that goes. It is now 8:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, and here's your news.
Good morning, I'm Kiara Powell with your KTXT News Update. President Obama says he'll use executive action to bypass lawmakers if Congress doesn't work together and get things done. Delivering the State of the Union address, the president urged Congress to embrace, quote, concrete practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class. Not everyone who listened to the president's State of the Union address liked it. A CNN/ORC international survey out overnight finds only 44% of speech watchers had a very positive reaction to what the president said. That's down almost 10% from last year's address. The makers of Angry Birds insist they're not providing any information on players to government spy agencies. A recent report alleges that the NSA and its British counterpart are trying to find out ways to tap into the information gathered by Angry Birds and other apps. Angry Birds maker Rovio issued a statement saying it values the trust of its fans and the company takes privacy very seriously. People who have trouble functioning in the morning without their cup of coffee could be suffering from caffeine use disorder. Morgan, this is for you. American University psychology professor Laura Giuliano co-authored a recent study on the condition. She says people who are becoming dependent on caffeine to the point where they suffer withdrawal symptoms if they don't get their fix. The American Psychiatric Association recently recognized caffeine use disorder as a health concern that needs further research. Maybe we should look into that. Here's Cutter Martin with a look at our weather.
Another day and another frigid morning out there. Temps right around 10 degrees, maybe 10 to 12 headed out the door this morning. But after 8 o'clock, southwesterly breeze, plenty of sun, really helping to boost those temperatures up. Should be in the 30s by noon this afternoon. Much better than yesterday. Highs in the upper 40s to near 50. Mostly sunny skies, but again, winds will be gusty, making it feel a bit cooler out there. Cold again tonight, but not nearly as cold as the past few nights. Tomorrow morning, mid and upper 20s. For the Raider, I'm Cutter Martin.
Thanks, Cutter. I know when DG and Marissa picked me up from West Commuter this morning, it was 14 degrees outside.
Oh, my goodness.
So insane. And Kira, I wouldn't call it, like, withdrawal symptoms or anything, but definitely, I just, like, I don't know. Maybe it has to do with, like, when you were a kid and, I don't know, you heated up milk or something. It's just, I like something warm in the morning.
Well, I
like,
say that as I have a Starbucks cup.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You're one I'll to talk.
Hey, we've all got one. You've got the coffee from downstairs. I've got Einstein's. Kira's got Starbucks. It's fantastic.
Yeah. But anyways, it is 8:33, and we have an interesting guest, a College of Media and Communication professor, Kelly Caulfield, will be here. On the phone with us talking about the State of the Union address last night that President Obama gave.
Yeah. I may be all right.
Hey, Dr. K, right. What you doing?
Hey, good morning, Kira, Kevin, Morgan, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good to see you, hear you.
Hey, I didn't want to interrupt. Go ahead. I'm abusing my coffee right now, so I don't mind waiting.
That's right.
That withdrawal, I'm telling you.
So what are your initial thoughts about the State of the Union address last night?
Well, so it was kind of, I mean, you know me, I love this stuff. And I was watching. The main message was income inequality or just inequality. Although, if you were trying to play a drinking game and take a shot every time he said income inequality, you would have taken no shots last night. I know because I was, and it never happened, and I was a little disappointed.
Oh, my gosh.
No, he alluded to it, danced around it, never mentioned it. Mm-hmm. First half of the speech was kind of collaborative, reaching across the aisle. At one point, he complimented John Boehner, and it was nice. He says the son of a barkeep can rise to become the speaker now.
Yes,
John Boehner gave
that.
Him a thumbs up and a smile. And, mm-hmm.
and rolled his eyes also.
One of the few smiles that he gave last night.
Yeah, there were a lot of eye rollings last night. So
well, there were a lot
happened.
Of applause, too. I feel like after every sentence he said, there was a 30-second applause, and I was just like, can y'all hold applause till the end, please?
That's
like,
every
you're
sentence.
You're dragging this on for like 2.5 hours when it could really be boiled down to
like
30
20 minutes.
Honestly.
Well, and that always happens in this speech. It's a great point, Morgan. And what happens is you'll get the president saying something like, my favorite color is blue.
And 30 seconds of applause.
You know, and it's just the nature of the State of the Union. He said it would be about an hour. It was an hour and 4 minutes, so he kind of kept to it. Bill Clinton was notorious for going much longer than expected, 90-minute State of the Union speech.
Well, that's because he talks so slow.
Exactly.
So do you have any initial, like, skepticism
about it?
Yeah,
so there were a number of things came up last night. And again, you know me, I'm an old-school journalist, so I poke fun at both sides. But I was joking with a friend. He walked in with Eric Cantor and Mitch McConnell, who were the House Majority Leader and the Senate Minority Leader, the two Republican leaders in the House and the Senate. He walked in with them, and that's about where bipartisanship ended. Two and a half minutes in, he started talking about the lowest unemployment, rebounding housing, and 3.5 in, he turned partisan. He started dissing Congress over the shutdown, over putting holds on the credit limits. I mean, he really took aim at the Republicans in Congress just 3.5 minutes in, so it didn't take too long. He tried to be modest and reach across the aisle, but I don't know that it lasted too long. A lot of the speech, a substantial portion of the speech, first two thirds really were domestic policy, very interested in this inequality issue. The most controversial thing, and he announced earlier yesterday that he was going to do this already with federal contractors, he's increasing the minimum wage for mm-hmm. private companies that do business with the federal government to $10.10 an hour. And he called for that to be done nationally last night. And that's kind of a gauntlet thrown, because not only is that an increase in the minimum wage, but it's a pretty substantial one.
Yeah.
It's almost a $3 an hour increase. I mean, that's a big increase.
Yeah. Do you think that small business owners, are they going to be affected by this? Or
I suspect they will. John Boehner was pretty blunt last night, and he said, look, I don't know, I'll tell you, the president thinks this is going to be good for the economy, good for job creation. I have a feeling that the number of jobs created by this policy is going to be somewhere around zero. That was John Boehner's response. Mm-hmm. I think there are three possibilities. Some companies, ExxonMobil has $40 billion in the bank. Apple has $80 billion in cash on hand. It's more money than all but about seven countries in the world. Some companies could simply afford to pay a higher minimum wage. But you're going to get a Hobson's choice with some other companies where owners who are earning $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year for themselves are not going to be able to just arbitrarily increase minimum wage and not do one of two things, which is either increase prices to try to get more money coming in or somehow cut labor costs. And that could either be moving people from full-time to part-time or laying some folks off. And I think it could have that impact. It's hard to say unless you do it. What's interesting is 30 states out of the 50, and President Obama said this last night in the speech, have already taken steps at the state level mm-hmm. to increase their state minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives Republicans in Congress an opportunity to shrug their shoulders and say, look, if this is such an issue, why must we step in where most of the states have already handled it?
Yeah.
It's a valid question.
So why do you think Obama would come in with this gauntlet, as you say, with such a steep minimum wage or the idea of raising minimum wage?
Well, I think it fits with a raft of policies he has, which is trying to close income inequality. He also called, for example, last night for universal pre-K, every four-year-old in the country mm-hmm. to get access to pre-K, mm-hmm. essentially paid for by taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was remarkable because he listed a number of things he wanted folks to pay for and didn't really say where he wanted the money to come from.
Yeah,
exactly.
At the same time, Congress just this week passed a new farm bill that reduces spending to farmers, also reduces spending for food stamps for the first time in many years. I don't think it's going to get anywhere in the Senate. But there's this clear tension. The president sort of openly betrayed he wants more spending on more social programs for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress same time saying, look, enough, we have to spend less on all kinds of stuff. I think the reason he went there last night, and the biggest, most controversial thing he gunned for was, if you won't do it, I will. I'm going to unleash executive orders.
Now, what do you think that him saying that had, what kind of an impact did that have on the public with him even going there?
Well, this is interesting. So let me start with this. Where do you think the president stands in relation to his predecessors on executive orders? More, fewer than, say, George Bush, Bill Clinton?
Just fewer. I would say fewer.
You think Obama's passed fewer? Because there's an email going around that Snopes jumped on saying he's passed 900 and something executive orders, and that he's just completely off. But it's not true, which is why it's on Snopes.
Oh, see, you know, it just... His impression that he gives is that he hasn't done any, or, you know, he hasn't done enough, or he hasn't, you know, got his quota yet. And so that's just
He's just got to pass more.
Yeah.
He's like, don't test me or I'm going to do this.
Exactly. That's kind of what it sounded like, was a threat or something, you know. Yeah.
Right. He's passed fewer than half of what Bill Clinton passed in his 8 years. He's well below George Bush. George Bush still had 130 more executive orders than the president has reached. So he's still well below his two predecessors. A wild guess for trivia fans, and I love to do this on our radio show. You know, we like to take both sides of every issue. What president do you think in the last half of the 20th century passed the most executive orders by a wide margin?
Clinton.
It has to be a liberal Democrat, right?
Was it Clinton?
In
the last how many years?
Kevin was guessing. Last half, since World War II.
Okay, Reagan.
Yeah, I was going to say Reagan.
Reagan absolutely was out front. 381 executive orders.
Wow.
President Obama did 167.
Okay, wow.
So I don't know. I mean, I think a big reason that came up, a big reason the income inequality agenda came up, is because it's an election year. It's a midterm election year.
Yeah.
The president is trying to stake his claim and position what the debate's going to be about. And if Republicans are on the defensive, opposing a minimum wage, opposing Obamacare as people sign up, opposing income inequality, they're just positions that are hard to fight against, whether they're right or not, because they make you look just mean.
Yeah, so what he's doing is he's really throwing this all out there really strong right now so that the Republicans have no choice. All they can do is fight it. And, you know, no matter who you are...
That's what they've been doing all along, haven't
they?
Yeah,
that's
very
true.
He knows just fighting everything he's
been
doing.
Dr. K brings up an interesting point that, you know, now he's doing this so that instead of bringing up their own ideas, they have to fight his.
Mm-hmm,
and they're going to look like the enemy as long as all they're doing is fighting him.
Mm-hmm.
So. Right, and not only the enemy, but they're going to look mean.
Yeah,
exactly.
You want people to make less money. You want people to not have health care. I mean, they're very difficult.
But do you think this will really make any kind of change within the Congress? Do you think they're going to be more willing to work together after that? Or
I don't. And I'll tell you why, for two reasons. And the biggest reason people rarely talk about why you're never going to get change in Congress, which is there are 435 representatives, but that's not how we vote for them. We vote for Randy Neugebauer, District 21, right here in our District 19, right here in our neighborhood. And he has a challenge, but I don't think it's a serious challenge. Our congressmen and 90% of other congressmen will get reelected because they're from highly partisan districts, Democrat and Republican. And Nancy Pelosi will be back. John Boehner will be back. You're just not going to see a change. They know it. All politics are local. And I think those guys will. I don't think we're going to see much change in the makeup of the House of Representatives. And that's why I don't think they feel any motivation. In fact, I hate to put it like this. It's bad. For, you know, if you're an Alabama conservative Republican, the worst thing you can do is compromise with the president and try to work with him. You'll lose your seat.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but that's how the table is set these days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set for the status quo to really remain the same right now. And I guess they've done a really good job of making sure that, you know, it's really the local partisanship that does that.
Right. And congressional districts are written at the state level. And so if you get a conservative red state like Texas or a liberal blue state like Massachusetts, those are the lawmakers that are drawing the districts for their Congress people, and they're teeing it up for their partisans. You know, that's how it works.
Yeah.
The president, it was interesting what the president bragged on last night, and this really struck me because he's trying to stake claim to some things, and there are some fact checks that say he embellished in a number of areas. He claimed the largest oil production ever, and that's exactly right, more oil and gas production. And yet in the very next sentence he said, and we're going to protect pristine national land,
yes,
federal land.
I noticed that.
And what's happened is there's been an explosion in oil and gas production on private land, and he's actually absolutely stonewalled on publicly held federal land. Now, look, it hasn't been an issue. Lots of oil and gas are coming out of the ground, largely because of fracking. And then the next thing he said was so that we can have affordable fuel here at home. And I thought, well, that's funny, because the reason there's a record production is because gas is $3 a gallon.
Right.
There's a lot of incentive for ExxonMobil to go to private land and go out of their way to extract as much as they can.
Exactly.
And he's done nothing to support that. He also claimed more than 9 million people have signed up for, and I love the way he phrased it, through Obamacare, more than 9 million people have signed up for private insurance or Medicare.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's more than 6 million for Medicare, and that's not at all what he had planned. And the problem is none of you have signed up for Obamacare, which I need for you to do to support old people like me so that you can balance out the risk for these insurance companies.
Get on it really quick.
You know, it was really funny. Jimmy Kimmel, the day before yesterday, went around and asked Americans just that he found on the street about, you know, what did you think about the address that the president gave, you know, and it was a day before it actually was. And so it was all these people saying, oh, it was so great, and like all of that. And then you see that the ratings are one of the lowest that they have been. And, you know, I just wonder, and maybe this is a little, I don't know, I guess mean or off of me, but do you think that he takes advantage of uneducated Americans by doing these theatrical speeches, doing all these promises and stuff, when you very well know there's no way that you're going to be able to get all of this done? There's no way that you're going to be able to, you know, where does this money come from? Do you know what I mean? Like, he gives you all these things, but where does that money actually come from is my question. And I think that's what the people need to know, is that it's just not feasible.
Well, that's a great question, and that's the argument that conservatives have been trying to make. I do think you're right that he definitely takes advantage of folks who aren't that well-informed. I think every Republican lawmaker does exactly the same thing in their races.
Mm-hmm.
And there are radio ads now for our John Cornyn, our Texas senator, has ads out. And, you know, he says in there things like, and they're good vote-getting messages, mm-hmm. and they're good solid messages for red state. He says, I own guns. You own guns. And the president, you know, and I'm
it's
thinking,
like a children's
I
book.
Don't recall the president taking aim, no pun intended, at the Second Amendment from the White House or Capitol. And it's, you know, it's a phantom argument. Yes, there's always a push after some dramatic shooting. And the president mentioned theater shooting, the mall shooting, Sandy Hook last night, and got strong applause from both sides. It's an emotional argument. And yet nothing changes. There's hardly ever any substantial change in policy that comes out of it. Because of this pushback, John Cornyn in his ads could talk about the farm bill, or how we need to compromise with what we pay for food stamps,
mm-hmm.
or how we need to find more creative ways to support all of these folks who've been unemployed for now 3 and 4 years. Is it right to take them off unemployment? Is it not? It's a compelling argument.
Wow, what have you been doing for 3 years? Not looking for a job, not applying? I mean,
you guys are mean. You should be.
As a like final question, if you had to give the president's address a letter grade, how would you grade it? And
well,
what's the reason?
And you're too kind. You're too easy, Dr. Caulfield. You're too sweet about your grades. You be hard.
Says a student who hasn't gotten a grade in my class. So,
yeah.
I would definitely grade him higher than Tierra, because he actually showed up and attended the
stage. That's right.
Thank you,
Dr. Caulfield.
I have been listening since 8 o'clock. When you mentioned that thing in Japan, I ran away from my radio. I think it was nice. It could have been, frankly, it could have been more partisan. I was expecting it to be more partisan. I'll tell you, one of the things I like that he does very well that I don't think any Bill Clinton was pretty good at it. Ronald Reagan was very good at it. And, of course, he was a professional actor. You know, there's a real casual vernacular, and this president is now very comfortable, more than he was 4 and 5 years ago with this speech. He's comfortable sort of turning, looking over his shoulder, using casual language, the facial expression. I like that, and I like that it's at times feels like this soaring speech from a teleprompter, which of course it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that part I like, and that's not substantive, that's just appearance. But I like that it's sort of more of a conversation, not only with the folks in the House of Congress, but also to the American people out there. That said, a lot of issues he touched on, he's setting the table for this midterm election. That's what they do. He's the leader of his party. I mean, it's certainly not an A. It was good. Had it been meaner or more partisan, I'd have given him a lower grade. So I guess I'd have to give him a B on this one.
Yes.
And wasn't outlandish with policies. President Bush, for example, announced a huge Mars program at one of his State of the Union addresses, and within months that was dead in the water. And sometimes it's just like you hear it and you think that's ridiculous, and and it is, and it goes away. He didn't go there either last night. So all in all, fairly reasonable. Could have been more partisan. Not bad.
Well, Dr. Koffold, we love having you on.
Absolutely.
Thanks
that
for,
was great.
Even though you wouldn't give me an A, I appreciate you being on our show.
Hey, I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. And, you know, I love to talk politics. And, hey, please join us tonight at 5 Live on KTXT The Raider to listen to Devil's Advocate.
Way to plug.
Yes,
absolutely.
Great show.
All righty. Right now we have Gotta Love by Dresses. And when we come back, we'll have some trending Twitter and Pinterest news for you.
I'm too curious to let you go, but next time I see ya, I'll be in my summer clothes. And don't forget that I was by myself before, and I can feel you choke my heart. Tried to do you wrong. I did my best to hurt you, but you sure make it hard. Cause all the times I think I hate you, I'm thinking about you. I promise I won't let you down. I know I won't believe you till I'm home and I'm not leaving. Until then, I'ma tell ya I'm just like you. We got a lot of feelings, we just don't know how. Love, 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 love while we can. Gotta love, 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 love while we can. Gotta love, 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 love while we can. It's in my head, you're everything that I want, and only I can see you just the way that you are. Hold me a little higher, turn your mind off just a moment. I promise I'm sticking around. No, you won't believe me till I'm home and I'm not leaving. Until then, I'ma tell ya I'm just like you. We got a lot of feelings, we just don't know how to feel them. Gotta love, 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 love while we can. Gotta love, 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 love while we can. Gotta love, 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 love while we can. Our minds up way too easy. We gotta love, 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 love.
Gotta Love by Dresses. I love, love, love them.
Uh-huh.
How clever.
Oh, yeah. Ha! I didn't even realize that until y'all said that, but cool. All
sure
righty.
You didn't.
Well,
sure.
Pete Seeger has passed away, and he is trending on Twitter. A lot of people just giving him some shout-outs and words of encouragement.
Explain
for his family.
Explain who Pete Seeger is.
You know, it looks like
he's
I've been
a musician.
Trying to figure it out. He's like a musician slash like advocate slash
so angry at you right
you know,
now.
You know, a lot of different things. But I mean, I can't sum it up in one word. I mean, he's so many different things, and he's not officially one. You know, he didn't really hit it big with music. He didn't really hit it. Oh, did he? So he is an artist then.
DG's going to get on the mic.
Get on the mic. Tell us who he is, because we're not old enough, apparently, to know who this is.
Are you not going to explain it to us? You're going to just pace around?
See, I told you, this is exactly the artist, activist, and man. He is an activist. He is an artist.
And Matt's angry, too.
And here comes DG. Explain what Pete Seeger is for us, DG.
Okay, I'm not on headset. Is this mic on? Can you
hear
me?
Yeah,
that one's
on.
Sorry, I'm violating a major studio rule here.
Yeah, you are.
Pete Seeger.
Strike one.
Is He's one of the greats in terms of writing music in this country. He may not have sung the songs that you heard of old, but he probably wrote them. He was the inspiration for so many music groups. He was, what, 92? So he goes way back.
Yeah.
He goes way back. But he was definitely the man who inspired a lot of other musicians to do what they did. And there's probably not a music group worth their salt that didn't have him as an inspiration. In fact, it is said that he was America's tuning fork when it came to music.
Well, Bill Clinton, he just tweeted out, he said, "Great Seeger's great heart was matched only by his commitment to social justice. Mm-hmm. My thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends." I thought that was pretty cool that Clinton would just tweet that out.
One thing you need to know about Pete Seeger, other than he was a great musician and a wonderful inspiration, is he honestly, heartfully believed in accomplishing social change through music. This land is your land. You've probably heard that, you know. If I had a hammer, and I may be getting that wrong, but he was very inspirational and truly believed in accomplishing social change through music. So when you look and, you know, in light of this week's Grammys, how much social change was trying to be accomplished, you know, gender roles and same-sex marriage and all of that stuff, Pete Seeger had a hand in that. He was at the forefront and really truly believed, and I think accomplished, his heartfelt goal of, you know, social change through music.
Well, great, so great.
That's you need to know.
Yeah, well, that's just one thing trending. Another thing as well, Happy Hump Day is trending. On Pinterest, of course, there's some really cool things on the popular tab. You can go and find out how to make granola bars without baking, and they're ready in 10 minutes.
Super and they're going to taste
and healthy.
Like dirt.
No.
Don't lie to me.
I mean, they might. They're granola. So, also, bacon double cheeseburger burger
no.
dip.
Oh, yes.
Great one for
I
the
like
Super
that.
Bowl. Super easy. You can find that on there. And, of course, anything going on in Lubbock this week?
Well, not much going on, like, in the city of Lubbock. But, again, tomorrow night here on campus, we have Thursday night, late movie night, which is going to be Captain Phillips from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. or wherever it ends in the Escondido Theater down in the sub. So go do that. And of course, looking into February next week. Oh yeah, we got Groundhog Day on Sunday. Morgan got mad at me for not mentioning that on Monday.
He won't come out.
No, he's not even gonna show up. He's just gonna be like, figure it out
more
on your
winter.
Own. Wednesday, open mic night in Barnes and Noble. That'll be fun. So that's February 5th. So go on out there and
do you have to register for that, or is it?
You do
open?
Have to. I think you can do either. I think you can just kind of walk up and go up as it is. But if you want to, I think you can go and register to get a specific time.
Yeah,
that
I've
you
been
play.
Once before. It's not very formal. People just kind of go when they, I think they have a sign up sheet, or you just kind of go up there if it's slow type thing.
So, Morgan, you'll be performing?
I will not be. I'm sorry. I will not
Darn
be.
It.
Yeah, I'm not feeling very artistic today or tomorrow.
I was hoping
for
some poetry
any time in February.
Time in February at all. And we also have a blood drive next Thursday and Friday. Go out for that. They'll have the blood truck set up. It's usually set up in front of the student union, or it'll be in the sub in the Lubbock room. Mm-hmm. And that is Thursday and Friday. So go,
and of course,
give blood.
As Professor Caulfield said earlier, the devil's advocate. At 5, is that correct?
Yeah, tonight at 5 p.m. The Devil's
Advocate. He is so great. He's very knowledgeable and is really interesting to listen to. So if y'all have time, definitely listen to that. And we will be with you again on Friday from all of us here. Thanks for listening. And you can always hit us up at the Raider 88.1 on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks for stopping by.
Have a great week.